Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to be talking with Scott Flora. Scott is an accomplished medical device executive who's held global leadership positions with companies such as Smith & Nephew, Covidien, which is now Medtronic. Scott was also CEO of Invuity, Omniguide, and Conventus Orthopedics. And he's held both public and private boards seats. And he's got some great thoughts he's going to share with us and things that he has learned in his career journey. Looking forward to today's conversation with Scott. Can you give us just a little bit of your story? We always love to hear people's stories and kind of their career history. And I know it's hard to get everything in just a couple minutes, but give us a quick overview of your career.
Sure. Tough in a half an hour, but no, I'm kidding. So I grew up in Illinois and I graduated from Millikan University and post-graduation did a leadership internship with a company, Hart Schaffner Marks, which is in the retail business. Sure. Quickly surmised that I wanted to do something different, something a little more interesting. So I moved into pharmaceuticals and medical device, where for 10 years I was in a single contributor role. And enjoyed that a great deal. And I moved through a couple of small early stage companies. And then I was with a startup and was one of their best contributors. And one of my early mentors talked me into taking my first leadership role. Mm. And he was actually a good mentor, good coach. And so from then I moved into a sales leadership role. One of my first turnarounds took the worst division, turned it around. Then I moved into sales and marketing role. We'll talk more about that later. Global sales and marketing, sold that division, moved into a bigger role. So I ended up in several leadership roles. And then about 10 years ago, walked away from all that to start my own consulting business. And I think the question that I got, that I was asked, that prompted me to do that was, are you running around the world because you enjoy it, or is this what you want to do, or what do you really want to do that makes you happy versus taking another hill? So I thought about that long and hard and decided to do something different. Mm.
And I know you sit on a number of boards currently, and we'll talk a little bit about that and just kind of your advice to those that would maybe want to get on a board or those that are working with boards.
Sure.
Talk about what was your first, and I'm throwing this at you. You're not expecting. What was your first job ever? Going back to childhood, what was the thing that that you did?
So when I wasn't, doing free work for my dad, my dad owned a small construction business and I would get drafted on weekends. My first job, believe it or not, was I worked in a restaurant and I cleaned up the restaurant after closing and washed dishes and did everything. Then I worked in a department store, building displays and putting mannequins together and doing all that kind of stuff. I didn't grow up in a wealthy family and always had to, do something, sure, to either put my way through college or have spending money. So lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah. So if you were able to go back to a 22-year-old, Scott, and give him some advice, what advice would you give him?
The first advice would be more inquisitive, validate, everybody has a strong set of beliefs, a strong set of, this is what I think we need to do. Be more inquisitive and validate those across a number of people, get a number of opinions, and you'll always find that you're going to get some opinions that you really align with and some that you don't. But it's always good to have that validation process. But I will tell you the best piece of advice I ever got in college was a gentleman who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he said to me, why are you in political science? We've tested you and you're off the charts as a sales and marketing executive. Mm. And he forced me to go to work in college. And I went to work in a men's store, worked 28 hours plus a week, honed my skills, got into the business school. But the other advice I would give myself and people is really get grounded on what makes you happy and what you do, and look for opportunities to find out, is this what I want to do? How do I, you know, is this something I want to apply myself to? So find out hard and early. Talk to a lot of people. You just can't talk to enough smart people that they can benefit you.
So did you intentionally set out to have mentors in your career? Did you, was that intentional, or did it kind of happen organically?
You know, I would say in the first 10 years of my career, I was fortunate to have a number of mentors, and I used them wisely and I enjoyed them. I think a mistake I made was when I got my first large leadership role. I didn't do enough with mentors. I became very busy in a turnaround, and I just kept plowing ahead. And that's the time when you need to engage with more mentors. And later on, mentors have become very important to me. And I think that's mentors, colleagues, just people that you can talk to and get their thoughts on things are critical.
So you've sit on boards currently, and a lot of times the people that listen to this podcast are new or up and coming leaders, and a lot of them are like, I'd love to sit on a board. How did you get on your first board, and what advice would you give somebody that's looking at joining the board?
So I got on my first board as a CEO, and was totally unprepared to do that, and was totally the biggest mistake you can make about a board is thinking it's a set of people in a company that you report to, because this is a set of individuals that are carving out some of their time. Either they represent a VC and they've invested, or they're a private equity person and they've invested, or there's somebody that's been hired to help sit on the board, and they're hired for a number of reasons. So when you're thinking about joining a board, you need to first spend some time understanding, do I want to do a private equity board? Do I want to do a VC back board? Do I want to do a public board? Or do I want to do a not-for-profit board? And I will tell you, I actually was on my university board for a year. And I am I'm a very results-oriented person. That's not the type of person that should be on a university board. And so I still give them treasure, and we've set up a scholarship in my parents' name there, but that kind of board work is not for me. So you really need to understand where do I want to contribute at a board level? And then you need to understand the mission of the company. So if you want to join a board and you want to join a VC back board, you need to understand, what does the VC want out of this? What stage is the company at? Is this the first CEO? Is the founder CEO? So there's a whole, we could talk an hour about boards, but board work is very interesting. But what you have to remember is being on a board is not an operating role unless you're asked to do an operating role as part of that board responsibility. So as a good friend of mine, mentor, once told me, a great board member is somebody that doesn't suck all the oxygen out of the room. Listen, help the CEO get through the board meeting, be thoughtful, and ask a relevant question, but don't dominate the board meeting.
Yeah, great advice. Think back to, you know, it sounds like you were successful doing kind of individual role in sales and marketing side of things. Talk about kind of that first role that you had where you actually were leading other people, and what do you wish you would have known before you took that position?
So I was a high contributor for a small VC backed company. I was probably, I think I was the number four or five salesman or three in volume. And this mentor of mine wanted me to move to the East Coast and take over the worst region and do something with it. And it's funny because the CEO didn't want me to do that because he didn't want that revenue plug in a big territory, but we worked through that. But what, I took over and one of the people there wanted the job, and I had to manage him. I had to ask a couple people to go and rebuild the team. I think this mentor that I had did a really good job of prepping me on hire, fire, selling, sales, hire, fire, training, building a team. He spent more time with me than a lot of people ever had on human dynamics, how to motivate differently. But the one thing that you need to learn, I was on a board call the other day, and the CEO was still talking about I versus we. And when you're leading a team, you got to park the individual contributor stuff. Mm. You got to walk from it. Sales leaders shouldn't get sales awards. They should be for the team. So that's probably the one thing. Took me a couple of years to get my head around. It's no longer me. It's us and they, and that's an important part of it.
Mm, that's great. So as you're looking at a team, and a lot of times you don't get the ability to choose who your team is when you take over a role, inherit kind of the current team, but making sure that the right people are in the right spots is so important, and kind of taking a look at, okay, where are the gaps? Talk about a little bit of your philosophy around that as far as in evaluating a team and figuring out, do we have the right people?
Yeah. So first off, it depends what size company you're in. So if you're in a startup or a small stage company, you've got to do that by first looking at the team, evaluating the team, and then laying out your thoughts on the team. And then you've got to go check with your peers, et cetera. If you've got a strong HR group that does talent management, you partner up with them. The biggest piece of advice I could give though is anytime you're thinking about the team, is you need to have a real rigid process. So the first part of the process is an evaluation of talents. Where does the company need to go? And even though, so let's say in one of my leadership roles, we went from a dividend stock to a growth stock. And so all of a sudden we needed not people that could just deliver, 3% growth. We needed people that could deliver breakout growth. We needed people that could deliver differently. So we had to develop a whole new set of capabilities and competencies and map that out against what the new mission was. So process on first evaluating the team, process around what is the new job, and then process around what is the requisite compensation to get those people that you need to execute that job. Then you go through the process of, the tough part about some people either need to move somewhere else. Some people maybe need to go to a different job, a different company. And then you've got the most rigorous and hardest part about the process is bringing new people in. And I've worked with leaders that, helped build a good process and bring people in the right way. Hiring is it's the most important thing you do. It's also the hardest thing you do. And if you hurry that process, you end up with mediocre people that really don't fit with what you were trying to do. And a critical part of this is understanding what's our culture. Is this the culture we want? Or what is the culture we want? And then we want to hire that culture. And then the really hard work starts, because after that's done, you've got to spend a ton of time on how do you build this group into a team? Because otherwise you just end up with, you hired from five different companies and you have people operating five different ways, which, it's a core tenet of execution. You've got to have that team operate effectively and work together effectively. So it's such an important process, assessing and building a team.
So as you're thinking about, you've got, and I had a guest on recently that talked about the difference between a group and a team. A team has a common mission and vision. How do you get that alignment? What are some things that you've done successfully to get alignment within your team to get them focused on the right things?
So there's a process I've used a couple times, and I actually work with a couple of external facilitators that have helped me in the past. We do a, most recently, when I was out in San Francisco, California, we went to the board, told the board, you know, it was a troubled company. We needed to turn it around. We presented what we thought the data said, here's the fix, went to the team, got the top execs of the team together. First, we got the leadership team together, got the leadership team on board with what do we need to do? Where do we need to go? What's the mission? What's the strategy? Worked through that. That took about a month. And then we brought the extended leadership team in and we said, okay. And each part of the leadership team got up and presented, you know, this is where we need to go. This is where we need to go. And then we broke into breakouts and, you know, dinners. But we spent time listening to people and we listened to their fears. We listened to what they, what their concerns were. Did they, you know, did they doubt it? Were they able to, you know, it's all about crossing the chasm, you know, is there really a burning platform? Or are you guys just making this up so we can do something different? You know, is it CEO flavor of the week? But I use that leadership team building process. I've used it a number of times. And it's been effective, I would say 80% of the time. The one thing that also I think is really important post those meetings is you follow up with the team members and you set up a reporting process, you set up an engagement, you set up check-ins, you do, you know, with the benefit of everybody being wired now, you can do great town halls quick and easy, but whatever it is, you got to communicate. You got to tell people, hey, you know, at this meeting, we launched this strategy. It's working. Or, hey, we've stubbed our toe here. Here's some corrections we think we got to make. But you got to be honest and you got to tell them where we're going. And you got to tell them, you got to keep them engaged in that process. And they get the mission then. They get all in.
So as you look back on Give me an example of a time where you had to have a really tough conversation with someone and kind of what do you think through as far as you're having? And I think that as new leaders, a lot of times it's you're maybe insecure in your leadership. And sometimes you're maybe talking to somebody that has maybe more experience than you do, but you need to see some change as far as in them. But talk a little bit about that and how you've approached that.
You mean as a team? Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
I think the last CEO role I did was the one where we really had to have a frank discussion with not only the management team, but all employees. We were well into our journey as a public company. I remember, frankly, I did my first results call and I talked about how we were going to become more shareholder value focused and worry about the shareholders. I got three emails from shareholders that said, are you kidding me? It's the first time we've ever heard that come from this company. But that was the cultural change we had to make. It was no longer just spend money. It was spend money effectively. So we had to go to everybody and say, we're going to do something dramatically different here because we have to survive. And we did, and we reshaped the organization. We rebuilt the leadership team. We rebuilt the strategy. We executed against that, but there were some really tough conversations. I remember my first staff meeting where everybody said, well, you know, everything we're doing is important. And I said, I appreciate that. But I said, we really need to fine tune our strategy because having a strategy allows you to say no to good ideas. And also a good strategy tells you what you're not going to do anymore. And I said, we're just doing too many things. We can't afford to do all these things anymore. We got to focus on what's important. That message, I will tell you, is the hardest message for executives to get their head around because they become really excited about what they're doing and impassioned, which I understand they should. But nobody wants to be working on something that isn't valued as a key part of the strategy. So those were very tough conversations individually with people as a collective whole. But we came out of that, and the board couldn't believe it. The last day we closed the books and sold the company, we had become EBITDA positive for the first time in the history of the company. And we had crossed a huge chasm. And it was all because of that team. That team And a lot of those team members have gone on to do, they're in some big jobs today and they're doing great things. That was a great team. They were laser focused and they were, they created the mission and they bought into the mission.
So having served on several boards and having led a company, what I think a lot of times people stumble as they go into a CEO role, and we have a number that are first time CEOs and they haven't really worked closely with the board before. Maybe they've given presentations in front of a board, but what advice would you give a new CEO who's coming in to lead and working with a board, and what's kind of your philosophy around that from sitting in that seat?
Yeah. So I will tell you, my philosophy is molded by making mistakes and then having some really good mentors after I made some mistakes. And then being on some boards, I've been on some boards with really good people, and I've been on some boards with people you're going, oh, wow. So, but the most important thing for a CEO is it's hard. First off, being a CEO is the loneliest job in the world. You've got to manage your team. You got to manage results, and you got to manage investors, and you got to manage the board. And you've got to understand and talk to each of your board as often as you talk to your leadership team. So you really need to communicate to the board. And you've also got to assess and understand, what is each board member looking for as being part of this board? Am I an investor in the board? And there's different investors. You know, I joined a board one time where I had four angel investors on the board and one VC, and they were diametrically opposed on the outcome. And so when I would call and they would call me and they would give me advice, I got 5 points of advice that were totally different. So as a CEO, you've got to understand that that's going to happen, but you've still got to take that to the board. The final piece is, as the CEO, you're part of the board and you have to act like you're part of the board. So when you go to a board meeting, you check your CEO hat and you lead the conversation, but you act as a board member. And that will get you the gravitas you need with the board. If you go in as a CEO and you just defend everything and act like, you know, the salesperson for the company, and the board gets a little turned off with that. But I can't say it enough that you've got to check in with your board members and you've got to understand what they want. You got to understand what they think. And then you've got to have these conversations where you help shape their thinking. As someone told me one time, the board meeting is done a month before the board meeting ever happens because you've shaped all the conversations with the board.
Yeah, that's wise advice. And I haven't had anybody say it that way. Think about, now that you have moved into an advisor role, you're the person that comes in to kind of assess and take a look at, you know, what's going on. What are some things that you've learned as you've moved into that type of role and working with a number of different companies?
Yeah, it never surprises me that the simplest things in a company are solved by people getting in a room and talking with one another. You know, I'm working with a company right now and it's an awesome company. I love the technology. Everybody on the team is great. But we're putting a forcing function in play to get the executive team to have a thoughtful conversation once a week. And, you know, people are sitting out there probably going, oh, you know, why is that hard? When you're in a small company and you're doing everything from making coffee to, you know, worrying about, you know, when are the shipping boxes coming in? Time flies and people think, well, he's got this, he's got that, but you got to take time to work as a team. And that's at a $10 million company, $100 million company, but creating a process, I call it an operating process. If you read the book Execution, there's an operating, it talks about, everybody has great strategies, but how do you operate? How do you operate that strategy? How do you operationalize it? And a lot of it is getting the people and then a process in place where the people inspect what they expect. So how do you get the right team together that talks about what's going on in the market, what's going on with customers, what's going on inside? And it, and it's an operations review, but it, you put it together in such that it's not where people come in and try to one up with data. People come in trying to take data and look at it as a team, work that data for the betterment of the franchise.
You mentioned a book, Execution, and I'm going to ask for kind of some of your top books that you would recommend to leaders. What are your recommendations?
So historically, you know, I'm giving my age away, but I was very foundationally built on Tom Peters' books, Execution by Larry Bossidy. You know, I read everything by Jack Welch. But then there was a guy, I read his book, Michael Tracy, The Discipline of Market Leaders. I actually had the opportunity to work with Michael Tracy. The Discipline of Market Leaders, I think, is fabulous because it really gets you to focus. What is our strategy and how do you focus around it? So those are favorites. My advice to people, though, I went on Amazon this morning. And if you're in a public company, you should read a book by somebody like Warren Buffett. You should read a book by Warren Buffett because he's the greatest investor. And you should understand how does a public company attract itself to investors? If you're in a private equity company, there's a new private equity company. There's a new PE book, a couple PE books out. Read a book by the top PE leaders out there and understand there's a big transformation in PE. You know, they used to be corporate raiders. Now they're builders of companies, totally different strategy. And if you're in a not-for-profit, read books by people that are leaders in your segment that you want to be in. I also read a lot of history. And, you know, there's some spy novels and stuff I read, but I love history because history, there's some great leadership traits in reading about history and leaders. So, but I do, you know, I do encourage people to seek out leaders and where they're at, and those leaders can help them think about, you know, what type of business I'm in and how do I add value to that.
So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
So, you know, I've traveled all my life. This is an interesting, you know, so I've traveled a lot all my life. So when I recharge, I like to spend time with my wife and family. Now my family's grown and, you know, grandkids are all coming in a couple of days. But my wife and I, to recharge, we actually like to travel.
Okay.
So, you know, we've been to Europe a couple of times this year, but we enjoy that. And we do a lot of walking tours and that's fun for us. Golf, you know, I'm never going to be a great golfer, but we like to go out and play golf. Now my wife and I play golf together. But I've always been a collector of wine and, I just, relax and like to sit and think about things and enjoy a good glass of wine. But, you know, that would be the extent of it.
Favorite wine. What's your favorite?
Favorite wine. Okay. So I have Brunello, anything with the B's, Brunello di Montalcino, Barolo, and Barbera. I love Italian wine. Okay. Can't afford a lot of the big French wines. And then I have a really decent California collection. We like to go to Napa and Sonoma and do the restaurants and sure. Yeah.
What parting advice would you have for a new leader?
So my parting advice for a new leader is to make sure, first off, when you take the leadership role, is this what I want to do? Don't take a hill. Take a role that you really want to do and then put a process in place where it's about your team. And then be proud of building a great team. And always remember that as a leader, your contributions are valued by the company and find a way to put those contributions into play within the company, whether it's peer-to-peer, helping your peers, helping your superiors, helping people underneath you, helping anybody, but you've got something to contribute to the organization and contribute it. But if people don't value those contributions, you need to think about the organization you're in because you want to be in an organization that gets people, that wants the best people, that wants those good people to contribute effectively and be part of those contributions. And remember, it's not about activities. It's about results.
Great. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed our conversation. I'm sure we could have stretched this out to a couple hours of conversation, but how would somebody learn more about your work and what you're doing?
Just check my LinkedIn site out, send me a message. I get on LinkedIn and I respond to messages. I get a lot of inbound messages about, can you do this? Can you do that? But, I am starting to hone down, I'm doing 4 or 5 projects right now, and that's a lot, but, happy to help people.
Great. Well, thanks so much again, and I wish you continued success in all you're doing.
All right, Mark, enjoyed it. Okay. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.